The show, Lionel Irving. He's here to share his story, his life. Lionel, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, man, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Especially sitting here with you, brother.
Man,
I'm excited.
That's a firm handshake. I think that's the firmest handshake I've had on the show.
Well, that's a hey, that's a compliment. I know you just shook a few hands, so I appreciate
that. He's strong.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's nice to have you. We've been trying to do this for a long, long, long time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been knowing you for a long time as well, right?
Yeah.
I've been knowing you since, I would say, middle school, right?
Yeah, easy. I would say at least 1990, 89,
mm-hmm.
somewhere around then. So it's been, man, 40 years.
40 years? Wow, that's a long time. Now you're telling my age. I don't want to tell my age too much. Put the camera on me. I don't want to tell my age too much.
Yeah.
But anyway. Yeah, I remember growing up, and Lionel was my hero to some extent in what we call the hood, the hood. But we've grown out of the hood, and we have done a lot to help the hood, help the community become better. And so that's what you're here to talk about. So
yeah,
how do you recall when we first met? Or
well,
I don't recall. Go ahead.
Well, you're Marcus's little brother.
I'm not Marcus' little brother. That's my cousin.
That's your cousin?
And
I thought you was his little brother.
And I'm older than him.
Oh, get out of here.
He's my
man.
Younger cousin.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's how I met you through Marcus, but I always thought you was his brother.
No. That's my cousin. So
well, y'all acted like brothers.
I wouldn't even say that. I didn't even we never grew up together. So I think if I can recall, we met through Andre. And back in the neighborhood, back on 13th, you know, that time.
Over off of 13th in like Alberta area?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, man, you're bringing it back now because I live right there on 10th in Alberta.
Yep.
Right? You stayed off of that area a little bit.
Yep.
So that's crazy, though, but I always thought you was Marcus's little brother. Even
no.
Then.
So for the record, on TV,
that
is not my brother. And I'm older than him, so he's my younger brother.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But anyway, younger cousin, but brother as in ethnicity and just brotherly manship context. But anyway, we got you on the show to talk about your background and then also some of the programs that you're involved in to help folks out, to help out young people, and just to help out the community. So we want to hear more about that as we proceed through this interview. So, but let's hear about your story, your life, though. How do you get to where you get to this point, where you're from, all that good stuff, and then we'll go into your business and your organization.
Well, I'm born and raised in Portland, Oregon, and I come from a traumatized background as far as my family's, you know, was a part of the heroin epidemic. So, you know, we used to always call people crack babies back then.
Mm-hmm.
But in actuality, the group before them was heroin babies.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So the group before the crack babies was heroin babies. So I was a heroin baby. And so I grew up in kind of that lifestyle, lived with a lot different of my family members that stood up for my mother when she wasn't able to stand up, and my father did an extensive amount of time in prison. So I didn't really meet him until later on.
Let me stop you. I remember your mom. Your mom was very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She was a sweet lady.
Man, Debbie K. Johnson.
Yeah.
We can't say her name enough, you know. When she got herself together, she became a beacon of the community.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, you know, just think about my mom. That's who I emulate myself after.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I seen my mother with her comeback story. And so when I seen her come back from the depths, I knew that I could too. And so growing up in that lifestyle, I made a whole bunch of poor choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to prison, federal prison. I got sentenced to 204 months in federal prison for selling cocaine base. And I got sentenced to 144 months in state prison for manslaughter.
Wow.
Right. And so that adds up to 29 years.
29 years? Wow,
yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I was 22 years old. I got sentenced to 29 years in prison. And I made a ton of poor choices, but prison was the best thing happened to me.
Why would you say
me,
that? Why would you say that?
Because I didn't have no tools. My literacy level was extremely low, and I didn't have no tools to deal with the trauma I'd already been dealing with. And I had the guys that I hung around, their problem solving tactics was like all they had was a hammer. And so every problem wasn't a nail. So I was running around in my adolescent age trying to tackle every problem with a hammer. So that's only seek and destroy. Mm-hmm. And so when I got to prison, which a lot of people don't know, a lot of great brothers in prison.
You said great brothers?
Great men. I'm talking about the best of our brothers is in prison. Mm-hmm. Because they've been attacked from the crack law that we talked about previously.
Yeah.
Those guys been in prison for 40 years. Mm-hmm. They done read for nonviolent crimes, mind you. Here I am sitting out in front of you, I got a violent crime.
Right.
And I sold drugs. Mm-hmm. Now these guys got life sentences for the crack law. And so they done read 10,000 books. You know, their knowledge and their understanding of the human body and the mind is so strong. These brothers is glowing. Mm-hmm. And so that's who invested in me, which enabled me to be the man I am today. Mm-hmm. So I got to prison, I could barely read and write. I had like a third or fourth grade education. Mm-hmm. My partner had his lady sitting on Hooked on Phonics when he realized I couldn't read. So my OG cellmate knew my daddy. Mm-hmm. He said, "You little Mo, I know your daddy." And you know.
Well, let me, I got to break some stuff down because you got to say what OG is. This crowd is broad. So yeah. What is OG? You got to define OG for everyone. So, I know what it is, but you got to translate.
So OG has many terms. OG, it can be an original gangster. But now I use it as an original gentleman. Uh-huh. So when I refer to somebody as an OG, it's an original gentleman and somebody that we should emulate. Mm-hmm. And so the OG, well, you know, was an inmate who had been in prison for 25 years already. Mm-hmm. He had two life sentences.
Wow.
And he invested in me because he knew my daddy. And he said, "You smart people like you. You seem to like you got together, but you need to get some tools." Mm-hmm. And the first thing he did was help me learn how to read. And he said, "This is going to be able to help you get home. And then I'm going to take you to the law library, help you learn your case." So then once I learned how to read, once I started learning, my head started hurting. So one day he came to me, right? He was like, "Hey, little Mo, come on to the library." I'm like, "No, OG, man, my head is hurting." You know what I mean? He's like, "Hey, everybody, Mo's head is hurting." Right? It was a big old thing because they knew that, oh, this dude is waking up.
Oh, that's good.
He's losing, he using his brain now.
That's good.
Yeah, my head was pounding. Well, he was feeding that thing.
He said it was pounding.
Yeah, that head was growing. That brain was growing, man. I was using,
that's good.
I was using parts of my brain that I had never used before.
Right.
Right? I was comprehending. My vocabulary was stronger. I used to cuss every word.
Yeah.
I didn't have a lot of words to say cuss or cuz every word.
Yeah.
I didn't have a lot of, you know, vocabulary. My verbiage was low.
Right.
And so, I mean, I just, prison helped save me in so many ways. You know, I've got four trades out of there. I'm a certified solar panel technician. I ran the solar panel factory in the prison for 10 years.
Really?
Yeah, I ran it. I was the expediter and the final QA. Uh-huh. I'm a certified patent specialist where if you know how you've got a patent for something that you want to create something and
you make
a patent.
Yeah, I know
so
what
there's
a patent
people
is.
That come in, you know, how you write it. Then there's other people that come and write it for you and put in special characters and change your claims around as they modify it. So I did that.
That's great.
I'm an office clerk. I'm a certified referee, right? So another thing prison really did for me that I'm always grateful for is for my OG partner, he was smart.
Well, you say OG partner, so your friend, right?
Yeah, my OG partner, yeah. Okay. He was like my dad before I left prison.
Okay.
I did my whole 15 years with him. He'd already been down 25 years, right? And I couldn't sleep. So as I started learning, then my conscience and my moral compass started to grow. So I couldn't sleep because of the things that I've done on the streets.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm like, I can't really sleep. You know what I mean? He's like, "Man, you need to go talk to Dr. Poppy." I'm like, "Who's that?" Like, "That's the psych." I'm like, "Oh, no, I don't talk to psychs, man. That's not what we do, OG. I don't need no psych. Ain't nothing crazy about me." And then he said I was traumatized, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, traumatized? I'm like, I'm not never no victim. Because in my mind, the only way you could be traumatized is if you were the victim.
Would you have PTSD?
Yeah, PTSD, a host of other traumas because I actually, you know, committed a person-to-person crime.
Uh-huh.
I shot and killed somebody, mm-hmm. right? That's something that you can never not unsee. And yeah. on top of all the stuff I'd done prior up to that point. Mm-hmm. So now that all the stuff that I'd done prior up to that was cool with my moral compass before I woke up, it wasn't cool with my body no more. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't really, I could put on a bravo like I was confident, I loved myself, but in actuality, I was down on myself. And Dr. Poppy helped me catch on to that. Mm-hmm. So I went and seen Dr. Poppy through my OG partner's suggestion. We trust Dr. Poppy. Go down there and see him. He's going to help you. And when I went in there, it's this treatment called the EDI treatment. You know what that is? It's some type of eye treatment as part of therapy.
Okay.
Where you follow the pen. So in my mind, I'm like,
Like hypnotists, right? If they do,
man, you must be. That's what I was thinking. Okay. So I'm sitting like, this dude's not finna hypnotize me. Please, you know what I mean? So he's doing it. I'm like, yeah, bro. Okay. I'm not never following that pen. I'm not finna get hypnotized by this dude.
And you went into a trance or?
No. So I went with him for like about 3 weeks through the game, right?
Yeah.
Because I was just doing it out of respect for my OG partner.
Yeah.
But the dude kept trying to hypnotize me in my mind.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm not doing it. So then he said he was finally fed up. Dr. Piper was a cool dude. You could barely understand him. He was an Indian dude.
He's from East India.
Yeah, he's from East India.
Okay.
Right? Cool dude. You could barely understand his accent is so strong, right?
But he's a great.
I love him, man, because he woke me up with some key tools. Yeah. He said, so he's mad now.
Yeah.
Because I've been going in there for a few weeks faking. And he said, you know, Irving, you know, you act like you got all this confidence and you got it all figured out. He said, but you really don't even like yourself.
Mm.
I'm like, Dr. Poppy, I love myself. Like, you lost your mind. He said, I deserve people give you compliments and you can never receive them. He said, every time somebody give you a compliment, he said, I've even tested you here with a few compliments to see if I was right on point.
Uh-huh.
And every time somebody compliments you, you deflect it or you give credit to somebody else. And I was like, oh, man, whatever. It just like, I didn't really, but when I got back to the unit after leaving him, they was like, hey, Mo, man, where to ref the game today? And they were like, oh, man, wow, did you cook that chicken in the team?
Yeah.
And I was felt myself, I'm like, oh, man, it was a team effort. And, oh, you know, I just followed the recipe. I was never receiving the compliments.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first time, like, this dude might be on to something. So I went back to him. I'm like, okay, you on to something. But I don't like this EDI treatment because I don't know, like, what's treatment is, you trying to hypnotize me, what? So let me get the paperwork on it.
Yes.
So he gave me the paperwork on it so I would have read about what it was.
Yes.
And then I started doing it. We started tackling my traumas from my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
That led up to a lot of my poor decision making. And then he hit me with this word called objectivity. Mm. Right? That's making decisions based on facts and objective reality and not emotions. And
I'm all about objective.
Yeah, right?
Objectivity.
Yeah, hey,
thinking
come on.
Objectively.
Yeah, talk
logically.
About it. Yeah.
Using logic.
Yes.
That's what I like. Go ahead.
Yes. And so that word, right, it's a beacon to me because making decisions based on objective fact and reality.
Opposed to being subjective, right?
Versus emotions, right? And so in the gang culture, because I'm a gang member, I'm a gang veteran now, but then I was a gang member.
Yeah.
In the gang culture, excuse my French, I'm going to lay out a cuss word.
Well, you
here.
Can't use a cuss word on this show.
Okay, well, I'm not going to use it today. I'm glad I usually don't cuss anyway, so good.
Because remember, you said you increased your vocabulary. So
but I was going to just give a reaction of what we learned on the streets, how it was told to us.
Okay.
Right, but I was just using a more friendlier word. So only females react on emotions.
Uh-huh.
But the word female will be replaced with a derogatory term.
Okay.
Right, so that's the gang culture. They're going to teach you that all day long.
Right.
Only females aren't the emotional. Only females are emotional.
Right.
And so when he told me what objectivity was, and I got to examine it, I realized most of my poor decisions was based off emotions.
Mm-hmm.
There was no thought at all about it.
Yeah.
And so after that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you hit right on it. You know, I teach, right?
And, yeah.
And so when I teach a class on emotional intelligence, I strive, and also classes on conflict management, we hit on that you have to be more logical opposed to being emotional. And if you're more logical, decisions are made better and there's less issues that you'll have, especially with conflict. But go ahead.
Yeah, no question. You're right on time because just on that realm, if you're more logical, then you're thinking. If you're more emotional, then you're reacting. And so that's where when you do is to react, because we were raised on an impulsive culture. Somebody hits you, you hit them back.
Right.
What happens in here stays in here.
Yeah.
Retaliation is a must. So we're already being geared up as a young kid to be reactionary. Right, so that's where a lot of bad choices come from. So I'm just on point with that. So that's why I just say prison was a good thing, because I got so many tools.
Right.
And I got a chance to come back home.
For sure. So you got rehabilitated.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is an example of where it actually happened and you become.
Yeah, but not the system. We're not going to create the system with the rehabilitation.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of great black men in prison for nonviolent crimes, and there's no incentive when I was in prison to go to classes, to go and rehabilitate yourself, right? This is a big old, we'll talk about the justice system a whole nother time.
Yeah, that's a different conversation.
There's a big, you know, gambit between the black man and the justice system that is very unfair, and it's a farce, and it's a lot of great men in there. I'm going to tell you this, we're going to get off of that. I'm the least woke guy from prison. I'm the least.
You're the least what?
The least. Okay. Woke guy are the guys who are doing
woke,
right.
You mean woke? What
like
do you mean
woke up? Like okay. Got their mind right.
Aware. And
they aware of their self. They're aware of what they want to be in life. Mm-hmm. I'm the least woke guy.
Okay.
The least disciplined guy.
Okay.
The least motivated guy. The least impactful. So just imagine if I'm able to have this impact, and I'm the least of the guys that's still in there.
Yeah.
Just imagine how they would infuse our community. The impact that I had on my family, and I'm the least of us.
Yeah.
What kind of impact would they have on their families?
Understood.
You feel me?
Yeah, that's great. You know, I never looked at it like that. I never knew that there are, like you say, a lot of great men that are in prison. You know, not just great in knowledge, but just in character and just sounds like they're spiritual. And
yeah.
That they're, like you said, awoke, or woke, rather, aware of things. So let's talk about what you've done since you've been out and how you've helped others become awoke, as we call it.
So, you know, I first started off my passing. I like to call it being the example, right, because somebody made an example for me. So my first actual program was called What It Do. We help assist teens in too deep out. I started that in prison. And so that's where that was like 2011, 2012, when I was ready now to have my own organization to start waking guys up. Because I was ready now. And so I came home in 2017. And when I came home, What It Do was a great prison program.
You just got out then.
Yeah.
2017?
Yeah, I'm just landed, man. I'm blessed. And so What It Do was a great prison program.
Uh-huh.
But it did not resonate on the streets.
Okay.
Because two different cultures, two different mindsets, two different people. In prison, you only get two endorphins in prison, fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
There's no joy or happiness. Even though you'll see people having love and happiness, there's always that mind, is it time to run or is it time to fight? That mm-hmm. never can leave your mind in prison. You can never not know your surroundings in prison. So that's a whole nother cycle gambit, right?
You're always on guard. And
you're always on guard.
You're always woke to possible
violence. Threats.
And, yeah, okay.
Yeah, because people die. And I was in a real prison. Like, I was in federal prison. So people die daily. People get killed over something as small as a TV.
Wow.
Yeah, people die. I have a friend die over the TV.
Wow.
You know, because he wants to watch The Young and the Restless at 11 o'clock. It comes on Channel 6.
Young and the Restless?
Young and the Restless.
Yeah.
Victor Newman, right? He wanted to watch Victor Newman, and they didn't want to watch it.
Okay.
And he wanted to be, he thought he was big and bad because he was big.
Okay.
And he was going to make them watch it.
Okay.
So he turned it, and they killed him.
Interesting.
And so so you just have that psyche in prison. You had to have a different approach with those guys.
Gotcha.
So when I came home from prison, I kind of had that same approach. Wasn't resonating. So I formed a group with some colleagues of mine called Men Building Men. And it was a great group. The pandemic, the COVID came, and kind of we had about a year and a half, 2 years of that, where we were getting kids as early as inception all the way to 90 men. And it was just all about closing those generational gaps, because the black man, you know, is on the black man's in a state of resurrection right now.
Yeah.
But it was on the brink of extinction. And so it's all these generational gaps in our families, that it's always the mother, the auntie, the school teacher lady, the nurse. So we wanted to bring that man back into these young men's life, so we can give them an example of what a man is.
Right.
And so we.
And
did.
By the way, I like to be a part of that. In a way, I can support that. I'd love to.
Yeah.
Be a part of it.
Yeah, we need you in there, right? We need kids, because you know how many young reporters that we have that would love to see and get information and knowledge from you, so you can tell them, hey man, go work on your dialect, right? Get your words right. They like, you know, because of average Joe don't know that you gotta be able to pronunciate the words in the fashion that is gonna resonate with the audience or on the mic. And so kids need to hear that from another black man. But so we ran that, Man Building Men, and we have four teammates. It was a great group, but the pandemic, because we was meeting in person, it was all in person.
Yeah.
So the pandemic kind of killed that, and we couldn't get the kids on Zooms, so everybody started doing their own programs.
Uh-huh.
And my hashtag has always been Love Is Stronger. Like, no matter what I've done.
Like your shirt,
like,
right?
My shirt, Love Is Stronger.
Can we get this shirt real quick? Maybe that might be. Maybe just sit up a little bit.
Yeah.
Sit up. Oh, there we go.
There we go. Look at him. Love
is strong. Keep the camera there. But yeah, love is strong. I like it. Go ahead.
And you see that fist? This is how I envision the community.
Yeah.
Right?
It's multicultural.
It's multicultural, and it's in unity. It's not separated. It's together, and that's where all the power is at. So I'm really big on, you know, crossing cultural lines, really being diverse, right, and really learning new cultures. And so I got a lot going with that too, when we get on another time. But so I started Love is Stronger. And when I started Love is Stronger, my number one thing was to reduce the recidivism rate.
Reduce what?
The recidivism rate.
Okay.
Because the recidivism rate right now is...
What's that?
So if you get out of prison,
yeah,
the recidivism rate, which is 77% chance, which is that's called recidivism. You're gonna commit another crime.
Oh.
Right. It's a 77% chance that you're gonna commit another crime and go back to prison.
Really?
Yeah. But in that, what they don't tell you though is if you can make it 2 year mark, then it drops down to 35%. But in that first 2 years, what they don't tell you is the obstacles that the justice system puts on these guys that get out of prison.
Yeah.
Right, it's a big setup gambit to get you going back. And so I want to be the guy to help them not don't fall for those pitfalls and those traps and those barriers that probation officers, halfway house, their old homies, their old ladies, all these other influences going to come in once you come home. They need a buffer.
Yeah.
See, I had a buffer with my sisters.
Yeah.
So I try to be that same buffer for guys. I don't even try to be. That's what I be. You know, if you need pocket money, we're going to go find it and give it to you. Your son needs some shoes. We're going to give you some money to go get him some shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Those type of things. And so...
That's great. I know your sisters, too. They're very, very nice.
Yeah, they're black. You know about my sisters?
And my cousin, Tasha, is like your sister, too.
Tasha Bell.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, I love Tasha. Hi,
which
Toddy,
is my
man.
Sister.
Yeah. I love Toddy. She lived with... When my mother had got clean, Tasha lived with us for quite some time.
Yeah, I remember
and,
that.
Yeah, we love her dearly. That's my little sister.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Well, good. So, so you have that... program. Do you have any other programs that you affiliate with?
Yeah, so Love is Stronger, really, we're doing a lot of multifaceted things. We're also doing an inner community gathering where we're taking guys who are like me with my background, meaning you have fell down before and you picked yourself up, and we have a group of Rotarians. If you're familiar with the Rotarians group, they're one of the biggest service groups in the world, right? And most of the Rotarians are always people who are well off. And so we're mixing those two factions, guys like myself who have made poor choices, but now outstanding community members have businesses, with the Rotarians who are might not have been able to see the other side of the streets and had not had opportunity to interact with guys like me, just because of, we got all this stuff in the middle, keep us separated.
Right.
And so now we're doing that, the inner community gathering we do once a month. We go and have lunch. We have a social...
Oh, I think I've seen it. It was did you use them at the Lloyd Center?
Yeah. We go have lunch. It was at Azteca. And then we have a social justice Zoom that we also do with them. It's all about what we can do as what's actionable. Right now, we're really looking at the financial district on why it's hard for me to go in there with an 800 credit score and have $250,000 of revenue on my books and still have a hard time getting a loan. Don't make no sense.
Right.
And so but now we got the Rotarians on it with us. They're all the players inside of Portland. These are all the richest people in Portland. A lot of them, all of them ain't rich, but the majority of them are the ones who have, you know, really won. They have generational wealth,
for
lack of a better understanding.
That's good.
So we're mixing those fractions. We're creating a youth group where we're pulling kids from Lake Oswego, Beaverton, the Pearl District in North and Northeast Portland, and we're going to create the same intercommunity gathering for those guys, but it's going to be a lot more structured around delivering tools like de-escalation, financial literacy, empathy training, just a lot of that stuff.
Oh, empathy training, man.
Yeah.
I do that.
Yeah.
You need more trainings for that?
We're going to call you. Yeah, we need
call
you.
Call me, man.
No, we need you.
I'm great on empathy.
Yeah.
I teach that very thoroughly. That's in pathos, which means in feeling in the Greek. So, and sympathy is with pathos. But anyway, I'm getting a teaching over here.
No, glad. I'm trying to learn something. Yeah, so give it to me, man.
All right, well, cool. So so before we get out of here, I want to hear some positive stories, because we did talk about a lot of, you know, I would say some dark stories, which I think are encouraging. But I want to hear
it heavy stuff.
It's some heavy stuff, and I want to hear some more lighter things. So this show is about positivity and how we can inspire others. So do you have any success stories on how you've helped maybe a young person or how your program has really helped the community as a whole?
Yeah, well, I think the most important thing is that I'm a success story.
Okay.
Right? So right now, Love is Stronger as a company, we have held 30 events in the most traumatized areas with no violence. You know what I mean? We go to areas and we turn guys into entrepreneurs.
That's great. So, I love that.
So, because I vendor, it's my event. So if I go to an area where some guys are maybe hanging out and doing things, I'm going to say, hey, what you doing with your money? Go buy a snow cone machine. And then here go my guy's number. He's going to help you get an LLC. And next time I have an event here, I'm a vendor with you.
Right? Hey, I want to learn from you, too. I want to do that, too.
Yeah, we
can
do
it.
Hey,
those people back there, you want to learn, too.
Yeah, we need them. Well, we need the people who watching to vendor with
these
guys.
Yeah, the people
to
watch it, yeah.
And to tap in, right?
For sure.
And be involved. And so I think we got such a heavy time right now in the community in Portland that we have to be realistic about what's going on in our community, mm-hmm. and also be encouraged that now we are in the fight still, right? Because I've been over to over 50 funerals in the last year and a half, right? To the point where I stopped going to them unless it's mandatory. Uh-huh. And so just knowing that hasn't dampened my spirit in the resolve that I have for our community,
right?
And the young men. That's where I got 7 young guys I call the Soldiers of Love. And so what they are active bystanders and positive influencers in their environment. So I give them the active bystander training. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. Look it up. It's not much. But what it essentially says is if you see something happening, you will intervene positively and to give guys a second to think. And if that doesn't work, you're not going to harm yourself. If need be, you will call the police to save somebody. That's an active bystander. A positive influencer is somebody, and these are my young guys now, is somebody that is constantly giving their peers positive peer pressure. Right? We're going to send them on a mission, and we're going to pay them to do that. Go and be a positive peer pressure. Go to the games and say, man, y'all kill that noise. Y'all don't fight. Yeah. Go to school and say, man, do your homework too. Yes. Don't go over there too. We want to pay kids to do that.
That's right? Great.
Yeah,
that's
very powerful.
That's smart, too.
Yeah, we got 7.
You pay the kids to be positive influencers.
Yeah.
That's great. That's very smart.
Yeah, and that's where they're going to get. Who else you going to listen to versus your peer?
Yeah.
I could go talk all day long.
Yeah, because you make a good point. You know, if anything, the reason why we get into trouble, especially at those ages, is because of peer pressure versus switching around to be pressure for something positive, which is great. So, Lionel, how do we stay in contact with you?
So you can find me on Instagram, bullet_free_weekend. You can find me on Facebook, Love is Stronger, Inc. My website is loveisstrongerinc.com. My Facebook is Lionel Irving. You can call me, 503-793-0985. If you want to be involved in uplifting the community, if you want to volunteer for any pro-social events. And I just want to say this to the people that's very important. You know, we community-based organizations always talk about resources. And we know we need the money for sure. We can do a lot with it. But the number one resource that I want a person to come from to my company with, my organization, is to be able to come and get some time to these kids. Like how have you come in there and give an empathy training, right? And so these kids can learn some real tools so they can be successful. Because we got too many community members that's doing great things that's just keeping it inside their household. Hmm. We need to get our most vulnerable kids access to this information because we don't know when they're going to spark.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for coming to the show.
Yeah, man. I love you, man. I'm proud of you, bro. For real, man. I love you, man.
I love you too. You said so. His shirt is Love is Stronger. So I appreciate that.
Yeah,
so,
Love is Stronger, man.
So we want to
get him with that.
We want to thank Irving for coming to the show. We want to thank you for watching the show. You heard how he has changed his life and how he's helping others change their life. How he's making others woke. Love is Stronger. We want to thank you for watching the show. Have an awesome day.